Welcome back to the Leaders Lab podcast. I'm your host, Ken Eslick. I am super excited for you guys to meet Tyler Mount. I just got done speaking with him, and what a guy, what a career. And I don't even think his own intro does him justice, but I'll read it anyway. As an industry-leading branding and digital strategy expert, Tyler Mount has served as a branding and business consultant, digital marketer, and social strategist to nearly 1,000 clients spanning 14 countries worldwide. As the owner of Henry Street Creative Agency, specializing in brand design, content creation, and web development for some of the most esteemed industry professionals, Tyler and his team have partnered with Ryan Serhant, Spencer Raskoff, the founder of Zillow, John Legarry, CEO of T-Mobile, NBC, One Hotel, the list goes on and on. Tyler's career has been profiled in dozens of reputable publications, including the New York Times, Forbes, Medium, and Out Magazine, in addition to serving as a keynote speaker for marketing and real estate conferences across the country. His non-traditional direct approach empowers business owners to take control of their businesses and build empires. Now, one thing he left out of here is he is also a Broadway producer. He's won 3 Tony Awards, and he's got quite the story. So I can't wait for you to join me in my conversation with Tyler Mount. Tyler, welcome to the Leaders Lab.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Ken.
Tyler, the more I researched you and, of course, just did your intro, you've done so many amazing and like diverse things, I think, in your career. It's almost like you've had multiple careers going. I always like to start with just your story. So can you give me the backdrop? Like, where are you from? What was life growing up there? I kind of want to know all about you before we dive into the business stuff.
Well, I hope you don't regret that. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I guess I do have a really strange trajectory that got me to today. But the more work I do with people, I realize like everyone does, right? My story is unique, but the fact that I have a unique story isn't that unique. But for me, you know, just like everyone, my background and my history has defined obviously who I am today and how I work with the people I work with today. So I grew up in, whether you could believe it or not, in super small town Texas, 300 people at the time, one stoplight. My grandparents owned and still own almost 1,000-acre cattle farm. I grew up jumping on hay bales. Like, imagine the polar opposite of obviously my authentic truth of who I am here in New York City today. And I'm really thankful for that. I have a vantage point and a viewpoint that a lot of people in New York City aren't lucky enough to have. Not that their vantage point isn't just as valuable, but growing up in small town Texas, it really served as the catalyst and my motivator to do something bigger than small town Texas. So growing up, I was always involved in the arts, specifically performance. Okay. If you can't tell, I have a lot of energy, no cocaine, no caffeine. This is just me. This is just me 100% authentically. But, you know, I really sought theater and like the high school theater department as my refuge. I wasn't wildly popular. I was small and scrawny, and I just didn't really fit in outside of the theater community. And that was my safe haven. When I say that it was my reason for living, I'm not exaggerating. I got out of bed thrilled to go to school every day. I couldn't wait for play rehearsal at the end of the day. I lived for this for whatever reason. Unbeknownst to me, I still don't know why, but I loved it. From there, I went to school in Austin, which is a baby step up from super conservative Texas to a little, you know, more open-minded, liberal, I'll say, you know, liberal island.
Austin's like the Berkeley of Texas, sort of, right?
Can I tell you, I've never heard that, and it is so accurate. I'm going to steal it and use it forever, right? It is, you know, trademark Ken, right? It is the Berkeley of Texas. And I pursued theater there, and I've always been the person who's really, really motivated and headstrong, and I'm going to do it. So right after graduation, I've always known since third grade I was moving to New York City. It's been my dream. It's been my aspiration. Despite, you know, a lot of people in my life, not my parents ever, but a lot of people in my life in Texas being like, why would you do that? Are you sure? You're just going to fail. And I was like, you know what? I might, but I probably won't, right? And I have to do it. So a long story, kind of shorter, moved to New York City, pursued avidly working on Broadway. I was fortunate enough through a strange twist of events and being in the right room at the right time with the right people, landing my first professional gig on an off-Broadway show. And then from there, my work ethic and really just being like, this isn't the job I want to retire with, right, but it's the job I have right now, but I'm going to show up. And what am I going to do? I'm going to do a good job, but most importantly, I'm going to have a great attitude. I was pricing lumber in the New York City Home Depot and painting the back of set pieces for a small, poorly sold off-Broadway show. Nice. But I showed up every day and I said, I'm going to have a good attitude about it. Right. And so that really opened doors for me, because that person sent me to this person that sent me to this person. And by the time I was 24, 25, I had four to five Broadway credits, which at my age was not unheard of, but was quite rare.
Sure.
Okay. And then this is where my life really started to change. Working a Broadway schedule is unlike anything you have ever done until you've done it. Ironically, Emma Stone just gave an interview being like, I don't know if I'll ever go back to Broadway because it's the hardest work I've ever done.
I actually heard her say that. Yeah.
Yeah. It is 8 shows a week. Unless you see people on Monday evenings, you see no one in your life, because I work every evening and every weekend. And when I'm off work, all of my friends or my partner is in work, right?
Right.
So it's grueling. And so I realized that wasn't my life's mission. And so at the time, I was constantly waiting for others, meaning in life, I was waiting for someone to give me permission to create or do something or have a job. And I said, mentally, why? Right. The idea I have to wait on Ken or Johnny or Tommy, right, to give me a job is a misnomer, especially in any creative endeavor. So I started at the time, which was a joke, a YouTube series that centered around Broadway. It was me and a Broadway quote unquote star. I'll use this word loosely here, but a star who would come to my living room, literally my living room in Manhattan, and drink some wine with me. And we'd do a quick interview and play a fun game. It was wildly authentic to who I was. It was irreverent. No one was at the time in 2014 doing this. The word influencer didn't exist.
Were you looking at it? So a couple of questions for you. So on that, when you launched it, were you launching it because it was fun, or were you launching it because you're like, maybe this will go somewhere? Like, was there an ambition behind it, or was it just you were messing around and having a good time?
It was exclusively because I was messing around and having a good time. One of my good friends was coming into the city that weekend from Texas. And I said, oh, I'm going to buy a really cheap digital camera. I'm going to prop it up and we're going to record something. Cool. I did it for me. I edited it. I put it on YouTube, and like, what, 150 people watched it, which is like nothing. But I was like, oh, 150 people watched it. And then people, our friends, of course, no one knew, but our friends were sharing it. And was like, this is funny. Okay, whatever. So ultimately, it started as a passion project. And then I found myself really loving doing it.
Right.
And then what I found is that people really enjoyed participating in it. Because when you do the traditional Broadway circuit and press circuit, you're answering the same questions about your creative process and why the show is important to Broadway right now. I'm asking about who you're dating and your favorite date. Like, it's very irreverent. Okay.
Right.
And long story short, it really took off. And when I say it took off like I would have never expected. It changed my life.
Yeah. You have like tens of thousands of followers on that now. Yeah.
Yeah. We were sending that concept to about 1 million people a month in 168 countries at the height of our work. Now, keep in mind, one of the first guests was Gloria Estefan. I had worked with her professionally, and she was like irritated that she hadn't been invited yet. And I'm like, you're the most successful Latin crossover artist in the history of pop music. You have like 17 Grammys. I just didn't think you would want to. I swear to you, the next day she showed up with her entourage. She filmed it. We played Truth or Dare, TMZ, Access Hollywood, E, they all picked it up because it's a good, like, feel good piece.
Oh, that's.
And then I was able to book anyone, give or take, right? I was able to go to anyone on Broadway and say, Gloria just did it, go to their press rep and have them in my apartment the next day.
That's amazing. So,
coming from small town Texas, crying in my bedroom, literally, because I so desperately wanted to be a part of a community. And the only way I could do it was to be an actor on Broadway, when that didn't feel like my calling when I started to pursue it professionally. This was the most aha moment for me to
realize
it
was authentic. It was authentic to who you are.
I can be wildly authentic and known, and dare I say, revered in the industry at the time for being non-traditional and doing what I did.
Right.
Long story short, that program was eventually acquired by Playbill, the Broadway Legacy brand. And then I was able to actually get paid to do it. So my full-time job eventually was doing this content series. And that's when we were sending it to a million people in 168 countries.
That's
I was
amazing.
able, I appreciate it. I was able to live Tyler's wildest dreams.
Yeah.
The biggest Broadway stars have been in my living room and sat on that couch,
That
right?
is so cool.
And I got to meet my heroes and meet my heroes in a non-traditional format in a way that I would have died to meet them. Like
Right.
singing the songs I sang of their cast recording in seventh grade, we sang on the couch, right?
That's so cool.
Those things really changed my career. So keep in mind at this point, following my authenticity, I now have a really popular content series. I see every single show on Broadway now, not today, but when I was doing this for free. Why? Because every single show knew that I could sell tickets better than most. Because I'd
Sure.
get into the space and say, I loved the show. Here's a ticket. I mean, here's a photo of the playbill. Game over. Right. And really, me and about two other people really defined what influencing on Broadway is today. And it was an accident, and I didn't ever strategize around it, but it really gave me my chops in personal brand and digital strategy.
It's very cool. I had a question for you, rewinding a
Yeah.
little bit. So, because I feel like there's like a common thread here that I'm picking up, which is that like back when you were in Texas and you're a kid and you said you're like you lived literally for the theater, right? Like couldn't wait, couldn't wait. And to me, it's like you found community there, right? You found like that was your place, and it was probably the one place being in a small town of 300 people. I mean, I don't know if there's that much else to do, right? And
Nothing.
so, but when you get to New York and you're working in theater, it's probably maybe not exactly meeting your expectations when you're at Home Depot measuring lumber and doing all that kind of stuff because that's not what you're looking for. But it sounds like you found that community again doing what you were doing on YouTube.
Absolutely. In a community more profound than I could have ever imagined.
Right.
It wasn't just the people in the show I was working on. Now it was anyone and everyone in the industry. And when you're at an event three times a week in the industry and people are asking to be on your show and you have
Sure.
press reps now coming to you being like, oh my gosh, like I will never forget, getting an email from Billy Porter's rep, who I have absolutely loved. And he was like very famous at this point, being like, Billy is dying to do your show. I'm like, incredible. Julie Andrews, Gloria, Lin-Manuel, Cynthia Erivo, like all of these people I've been fortunate enough to sit with exclusively because I was doing something non-traditional. If I was doing the traditional route, I would have never gained traction, in my opinion.
Was it a, I know you said you had worked with like Gloria Estefan before, so
Yeah.
there's familiar, you're familiar with her, but what about some of these other big stars? Do you ever get just freaked out or are you able to just like jump right into flow with them?
No, having done it for a very long time and having worked in the entertainment industry for a very long time, I look at these people as people. And
Yeah.
the reason my show was successful is because you get to see a quote unquote Broadway star in a non-traditional, accessible format.
Yeah,
So
being
instead of
normal
the
in your living
traditional,
room.
yeah, absolutely. Instead of those normal sound bites you could Google and get 50 explanations of on varying websites, there's only one website that you could go and see. I don't know, Lin-Manuel rapping about me, right? That is, the differentiation. And what I have found and what I've carried into my professional career today is the fact that access and relatability is the number one thing we should be striving for.
Yeah.
I was that seventh grader in small town Texas who was now watching my content and would have died to be on the couch with celebrity A, B, C, or D. I
Yes.
don't forget that. And I really channeled seventh grade Tyler in these moments because that is what moved the needle. Seventh graders in the middle of America were like, I am Tyler, right?
Sure.
I get it. And it was never a persona. Yeah, I had to turn it on, I guess, but it was always rooted in authenticity,
Yeah,
right?
you being you, and I think that attaching to your younger self, it probably kept you rooted in like gratitude. Like, wow, isn't this awesome? Like, I don't need to be freaked out by it, but this is pretty cool. And I think your ability to play at their level, it's got to be so refreshing when you're getting asked the same questions over and over and over again to just be like, can someone just talk to me like a real person? I mean,
100%.
yeah.
And I always prefaced it. I was like, hey, let me be clear in case your publicist didn't tell you, this is very non-traditional.
Right.
I'm going to talk to you about how I, as someone who, can't sing, right?
Right.
Can sing better than you, the Broadway star. And
Right.
then I'm going to give you a sample of how good I am. And
Right.
you're going to tell me that actually, yeah, you can have the contract.
Nice.
That is the level of irreverence that
Right.
people craved, right? And that's how I got those people on the couch, because they're like, oh my gosh, I can cut loose with this person and it's going to be really, really low key, right? Every single episode ended with a dance break, right? And
Nice.
that's how the credits rolled. And I had many of these stars say, for example, let's say Celebrity A is willing to do your show. Would you be willing to come to the theater and shoot it? My answer was always no.
Right.
I don't care who you are. It defeats the purpose of the concept.
Yes.
The appeal is having the person in my living room. And I understand that's not convenient. I'll pay for their town car service to get them here, but it has to be shot here on my couch, right?
Right.
So cut to, that served me really, really well. I got to live my wildest dreams, travel the world, people screaming, yelling my name, running. Like, it was like a very cool experience in a
That's
four
really cool.
block radius,
yeah.
right? That life is now gone by design. I don't miss that. I'm thankful to have had it. But ultimately, I had an incredible opportunity to transition from Playbill to NBC Universal, overseeing a portion of their digital strategy. Keep in mind, I'd now been working at this point 4 years in digital strategy, building personal brand. It just happened to be mine. And so when I was transitioning out of the Broadway space, technically, I announced the end of the show. We had an outpouring of support. And then I had a very fantastic and an incredibly established producer reach out to me, exclusively because they had seen and followed my career for a long time, saying, hey, Tyler, I know you're leaving the industry, quote unquote, but I think you would make a really, really good producer. You could raise money really well. You have a strong theatrical background. You're charismatic, but most importantly, and this was the kicker, you have a following. People want to work with you because of who you are today. And let me stress, that is the first time outside of my success in this content series, I realized, oh, personal brand supersedes everything else.
Right.
He literally knew I had never been a producer ever in my life. I had no technical skills. I had tons of soft skills, but I had no hard technical skills to empower me to do this. However, out of everyone on earth, he still reached out to me because of my personal brand.
Right.
And that really lit a fire in me of helping other people promote their personal brand. So cut to me saying, I don't know what I'm doing, but I firmly believe I'm never given an opportunity I'm not willing, ready, and able to take. So I said, I don't get it, but like, yeah, let's do it. So when I say fate in my career, yes, I have failed many times and there have been many devastating days, times, and blah, 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 blah in my career. It has not been all roses, okay? However, at the same time, what I realized in that moment, and when I tell you this story, it sounds like it's too good to be true, because when I tell you I hit the lottery, I truly hit the lottery.
Right.
That first show that we did together was a show called Once on This Island. I helped produce it, aka found funding for it. And at the last second, I was short on my raise that was required for me to be billed on the project. At the last second, I had an angel investor come through from this major investor who was doing me a favor, okay? And I know he did me a favor and it changed my career forever.
Nice.
Because I made my raise that night on the night of the deadline. I was consequently billed for the project, you know, me and a lot of other people, but it said Tyler Mount presents Once on This Island, okay? And it was nominated for the Tony, which was my first nomination. And then we were not going to win. I knew we weren't gonna win. This was not me being humble. Every critic said this other production was going to win. I thought the other production was going to win, but by God, we won.
Wow.
And when I tell you, I became not the youngest, but one of the youngest at the time. I was not anymore. I was one of the youngest producers to have ever won the Tony. I was 28. I believe I was like 28 at the time, 29 at the time. Then cut to, by the time I sat in my seat, after going up on stage at Radio City, about 15 emails in my inbox saying, I'm an idiot, I should have invested with you.
Right.
Right. So I say that to be like, then my next project, which was
Easy.
A show called Hadestown, right, which is still on Broadway. You know how this ends potentially. I sold that show, my portion of that show, in probably 48 hours. Okay. Same story. We went to the Tonys. We were predicted to win. I won. Okay. Next year, we did a show called The Inheritance. I raised for that in about 2 hours. I sent out 3 text messages and I said, it's yours, first right of refusal. I need to know in an hour. We sold it in about 2 hours, done. That was nominated. That was my third Tony. Then from there, I got nominated. I didn't win for my fourth, but I got nominated for a play. And that means that I've been nominated in every major category at the Tonys. And I was the youngest individual producer to have ever done so. To have been nominated for best musical, best revival of a musical, best play, and best revival of a play. And then through there, obviously, via the Broadway circuit, I've received Olivier's, Grammys, Drama Desk, Drama League, GLAAD Media Awards, you know, through my work on Broadway. And again, that would have never happened ever in a million years
if that one person didn't come through at the end.
Correct. But even before that, if that one person hadn't given me that opportunity, and even before that, if I hadn't created that content series, because he would have never known about me.
Right.
And so I say all of that, and that's the end of the story, right? But I say all of that to be really, really clear that life doesn't always work out the way we planned, because I was going to achieve the things I achieved by having to be on stage. I went beyond what I ever achieved. I have 3 Tonys. I have a Grammy. I've been the front spread of the arts section of the New York Times, right? All of those things happened never from acting, but always authentically following content strategy and following what I did. And then the rest is history. Now I serve as a brand strategist for some of the, you know, most incredible brand CEOs, thought leaders on earth.
Wow. What are the folks back in your 300 person town in Texas thinking about all this?
Well, look, I'll tell you, my parents and my family are obviously very proud of me. They don't understand what I do. They're like, oh, Tyler, you work hard. I'm like, you have no idea that I sit on calls all day and what I'm actually building and what I'm doing. But yeah, I still have some really, really good friends from high school who still live there that I get back to. They're major supporters. And, you know, what I hear 9 times out of 10 is like, oh, we always knew he was going to be famous. And it's funny because I'm not famous. And that's just the differentiation in mindset. The fact that I live in Manhattan makes me famous. So
yeah, I mean,
ultimately,
I think my family thought I was going to get elected president the first time I made $100,000. You know what I mean?
Oh, so it's absolutely. All about, we're ready to go. Yeah. Let's retire. Yeah. So it's obviously an interesting dichotomy, but something that I'm really, really proud of.
What made you pivot into like real estate and branding there? Like, how did that industry even hit your radar?
You won't be shocked at this point, but fate. I mean, truthfully, when I was in Austin in college, I got an opportunity to work as an administrative assistant at a real estate brokerage. Within a month, that real estate brokerage went under. Ironically, even though they had some of the top agents, and when I say top agents, I mean like top 5 agents in all of Austin. And I was young and hip and had a good attitude. And so those agents brought me as their executive assistants to their brand new brokerage that they were building. So when I see I went from no understanding of real estate to having a profound understanding of real estate, being licensed, doing their contract work, understanding the marketing efforts, building a brokerage from scratch alongside them, of course, that is what really got me into real estate. I love the finer things in life. I love looking at nice real estate. I love making money. Who doesn't? And so then out of my time at NBC, I had an incredible opportunity that just lined up perfectly. I was offered a position at one of the top development firms here in New York City as head of digital. So not only did that quite literally double my income, but it allowed me access to a $7 billion marketing portfolio. And so the opportunity that presented was unprecedented. Now, keep in mind, this was happening in 2020, right at the top of COVID. And I don't know if you heard, but no one was renting new office space in May of 2020. Right,
yeah.
Right. So ultimately, we knew this was coming, but I was laid off in November of 2020 based on that. Now, it's not coincidence that 3 weeks before that, I had been tapped by a portion of the Biden-Harris campaign in order to oversee a portion of digital strategy in the last, let's say, 12 weeks of the campaign. Now, regardless of your political affiliation, I don't care. I wouldn't even say that's completely representative necessarily of who I am. But what I will say here is that I knew that I could help any individual, including the future, we didn't know at the time, the future leader of the free world, a personal brand, and how that impacts many initiatives, whether that's voter turnout or, you know, approval ratings or things like that. So that's where I really worked there. Worked through the campaign. We were waiting for Pennsylvania to come in. We heard that Pennsylvania was about to come in. It was about to be called for Biden. We knew that he would be president-elect. Again, regardless of your political affiliation, writing that tweet announcing him as president-elect and looking
at the- Had to feel good.
Oh, watching, like, my apartment overlooked the FDR, which is, if you're not in New York, a massive highway on the east side of Manhattan. I watched traffic stop. It was one of the most profound, cool moments of my life, just because it was like, oh, we're actually affecting change. So that contract ended. Then I got a, for all intents and purposes, I got a call from the former CEO of T-Mobile, John Legere, an incredible, reverent, incredible business person. It, for all intents and purposes, agreed to have me run his personal digital strategy, and the rest is history. Referral after referral after referral has led me back to real estate. I've been so fortunate enough to work with quite literally the leaders of our industry, the founder of Zillow, the CEO of Twitter, the CEO of T-Mobile. Ryan Serhant here in New York is one of my clients. I worked with Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank. And ultimately, what we really focus on is personal brand and how personal brand can drive revenue and engagement and impression and commerce better than you ever marketing your product can. And that's what we really specialize in.
But and you'll do branding across industries, right? Like I know you're real estate heavy, but it is what it is, right? It's the people buy from who
Absolutely.
they like. So your whole thing is just getting them out there and seen, yeah.
Yeah, it's completely agnostic to industry because, again, in my strangely robust experience, I have marketed and successfully marketed, obviously, real estate, but outside of that, pediatric cardiologists, New York Times best-selling authors, Chinese financial institutions, Japanese VC firms, pharmaceutical companies, hotel brands, food brands, restaurants. You name it, the same concept is true. I don't really care about the corporate identity. I care about the people who are making decisions within the corporate identity, right? You having a podcast doesn't make you special. Big deal. There are literally tens of thousands of them. What makes this podcast special is you, right? Is your vantage point, your understanding of the material, right? And so that's what we would want to focus on. Yeah, the podcast is great, but it's only great because of you. So that's ultimately how I level set and how we really move the needle indirectly in terms of bottom line.
So when people are working with you that aren't the CEO of T-Mobile, right? Like there's only one of you. So how do people work with you? Do you guys have like online courses? Do you have coaches? Do you have like, how does that work?
So look, that's always a possibility in the future. I've been doing this for a long time, but what I have found is similarly to a lawyer and similarly to me constantly preaching about personal brand, I bill for my time. Right,
Yeah.
similarly to a lawyer would. And when people come to work with me, they come to work with me because I am what powers my consultancy, just like you are what powers your podcast, and just like listener A is what powers their business potentially. Typically, everyone is working with me one-on-one. That is the real value add here. I give you dedicated support every single week, but the real value is not that call. Yes, I love catching up with you. I love aligning. I love making sure I answer your questions in real time and we continue building that relationship. But the real work and what people really pay me that retainer for is the work we do in between, which is specifically, okay, Ken, we're talking about, let's say, this type of social strategy. I need you to actually go do that, but obviously send it to me before you post it. I'm going to redline it, right? I'm going to make sure we have edits. So most of my people, whether you're a Fortune 100 CEO or truthfully, if you're starting in real estate and you got your license this year in January of 2024, our work is similar, just geared directly to you and your target audience. So the more majority of the work that I do is off of calls, but really looking at me as a, let's say, a highly experienced fractional CMO for you and your business.
That's a really good way of summarizing it. Do you still have a foot in Broadway or no?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a foot in Broadway. There is nothing that would happen to probably kill that in me. I would say if, 10 years ago, that was 98% of my life, that's now 10% of my life. Again, I've been very fortunate with some of the shows I've been fortunate enough to produce. Hadestown is still on Broadway and
Amazing.
thriving. We're opening the West End production of Hadestown next month, which is fantastic. I have a few more irons in the fire. And yeah, it'll always be a part of who I am. As you probably know, in the arts, it's not wildly lucrative. I'm not buying a penthouse for me producing a Broadway show, even if it's successful. So what I do now is I work empowering people to build their personal brands and their empires, which empowers me to do an additional thing I love, which is Broadway. So
Yeah.
I I kind of treat that as my hobby that I accidentally have substantial experience in.
Yeah. So the branding helps fuel the other loves in your life from a financial perspective, which is really
Absolutely.
cool
Yeah,
because you've
absolutely.
always come back to community, right? And it maintains your community over that time. I had a couple of questions for you. So I think it's an overused term, but I'll use it anyway. So we always hear like imposter syndrome, right? And I'm like, was that ever a thing for you? Because you've switched gears so many times. You're like, all of a sudden it's like, hey, I think I'm really good at this. I'm really confident. Oh, holy shit. Now the CEO of T-Mobile is gonna fail or succeed very possibly based on how I guide him here. I mean, where is that for you? Is that just something where you're like, look, I've stepped into enough uncertain situations where I know I'll pull out of it? Or like, what does that look like for you when you jump into something new?
Yeah, I have a multi-pronged answer for you. So the truth is, and my parents would tell you this too, growing up as an only child, my parents have told me like they were both bullied in school. So when they had me, they said, we are going to do everything in our power because like I'm 5'5", 5'6" on a good day. My parents knew I was going to be the shortest kid in the class, right? And ironically, that matters when you're in sixth grade, not so much now, okay?
Sure.
Ultimately, they were like, we have to build up his confidence. And they joke now, they're like, I think we did too good of a job, right?
They went
Because
overboard.
absolutely, because
Yeah.
now I joke about it, right? But I'm like, the audacity I have to think that I can work in these rooms has actually been really empowering for my clients too. I'm
Right.
like, there's nothing different in me and you. It's just my ability to say, I know this is going to make me uncomfortable, but by God, I'm going to show up and do it. Because
Yes.
I operate under the philosophy is I'm only given opportunity that the universe says I'm ready to take. So if
Sure.
John Ledger calls me, it's because I'm ready to do it. Can I say with full certainty, I know absolutely everything he's going to present to me and I'm going to be able to solve everything? No. Okay.
Right.
But I'm never going to learn to if I don't try. And
Right.
so I have actually completely eradicated imposter syndrome in my work, which took a long time, but it's because now I look at my job and my skill set is navigating uncomfortable or uncertain circumstances. Instead of saying
Right.
this is uncomfortable or uncertain to me, I'm bad, I say, no, my job is to be in an uncomfortable situation. So I'm presented with that every single day. I,
Yes.
you know, have a client meeting here in an hour and a half, and I'm like, I haven't worked in this industry before. I've been very upfront. I'm never lying. I'm not like I'm an expert in this space. I'm an expert in personal brand, and the industry is agnostic. I'm going to learn so much about this, right? I have
Yes.
a pediatric cardiologist on my roster. I have no idea what this woman is talking about half the time, and I tell her that, right?
Right.
But it doesn't matter if we're talking about an infant's heart, or if we're talking about a $200 million penthouse in Manhattan, the same concept is really the same. So,
Yes.
leveraging that and reframing my mindset has really helped me mitigate imposter syndrome.
Well, I think when you said something in there, like at the beginning of that explanation, like when you lean into something and even though you're not, with 100% certainty, know that industry or whatever. And it's like, I think that's what stops so many people is we're waiting to say yes until we feel like we're the expert at this, or, I'm not going to really go out and try that sport or that activity until I'm great at it. It's like, you'll never be great at it. And to your point, if someone's calling you to do it, if the universe is calling you to do it, if an individual is calling you to do it, if something's pulling you towards it, and I think the more times you say yes, like you're building that muscle like over time. And so when you look at your career, and obviously you do have some really strong, obvious God-given talents and energy, but the biggest muscle you've been building is that ability to grow. I was talking to someone on my team this morning, and I was like, there is no growth without discomfort. It would just be
No.
doing the thing you're good at over and over again, right? I mean,
Yeah.
but like push yourself into it. And it sounds like that mechanism for you is very fast. Like, ooh, this looks scary. Who gives a shit? I've done it before. I'll do it
I don't
again. We'll
care.
be fine. Yeah.
Absolutely,
Yeah.
right? And it's also just being very honest too. Like, I'm always upfront with my clients. When I was talking with this doctor, I'm never going to be like, I'm the world's foremost experienced
Sure.
strategist in the medical world. Certainly not. I'm like, I've never repped a doctor, but I've repped multiple pharmaceutical companies. And I understand that despite many people's thoughts about the ethics of pharmaceutical companies, not that I disagree, is like they're here technically on paper to help people, right? So that's what you're doing too. So It really is the same exercise, just nuanced, person to person.
Well, and I think because of the clarity and honesty and probably the rapport you get as a result, is it's like, look, you're obviously capable in personal branding and marketing. I don't mind having a fresh set of eyes in my business. Like I own a talent acquisition company. If I choose the talent acquisition marketing guy, I'm going to get what they've given to every other talent acquisition firm. I'm not going to get a different set of eyes. So amazing to hear your story, man. How can people get in touch with you and work with you?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. I like doing these types of things, not to sell something. I do it
Sure.
because I enjoy meeting new people. I love spreading, my philosophy throughout the world. I've based my business on one simple concept. It's that lighting someone else's candle doesn't extinguish my own. There's enough time, resources, energy, and money in the world for us all to be successful. And so I really operate my business, and it's been really, really, really good to me because of that. With that in mind, and to answer your question, if you're listening, if even you can want to take me up on this offer, you can go to my website, tylergmount.com, take a look at my calendar, schedule a free 30-minute consult. And let me be clear what this is. This is not a consult disguised as a sales pitch. There is no sales deck. There is no, timeshare coming at the end of it, right? It really is, let me understand your business. Let me understand what's working, sure, but I actually care about more about what's not working. Let me help at least over 30 minutes point you in the right direction to get you going in the right direction. If that 30 minutes changes your life and changes your business, I can go to sleep at night. Now, obviously, a lot of those people retain with me long term. I'm not naive to that. But ultimately, my job is to help as many people as I can. So if you're listening, or even if you can want to take me up on the offer, visit me at tylergmount.com, sign up for a free consult, and I can't wait to hear more about your business, help point you in the right direction, and see if there is an efficient way that we can work together long term.
Awesome. I have it up right now. What's the difference between the Empire Builder and the Brand Accelerator?
Oh, well, see, look, I'm a marketer, right?
Damn.
Really, the only, now you are making this a sales pitch, Ken. The
No, I
only
don't care.
difference
I
here
want to
really
know.
is centered around how often you get to see me, right? One
Okay.
is a weekly package, the other one is bi-weekly. So
Got it.
ultimately, same context. It's just you get a little less FaceTime with me. So it really is up to how much accountability and how much handholding you need. The majority of my clients need the handholding, not because they're stupid by any means. They just need an accountability partner. You're always
Right.
going to show up for your workout if your trainer's there. You can skip the gym some days if you're feeling tired and your trainer's not there. So that's where I find the real value.
Tyler, I really appreciate you coming on. I love the way you've gotten your success, if that makes sense. Not that I should be the judge of that, but I just mean that I feel like you've always pursued what your gut, what your soul kind of told you to do, and it's always worked out for you, right? In the long run, it seems like,
Yeah.
in the short time we've gotten to know each other. And it's inspiring because I think if people lean into, what's in their heart and they stay with it. And, I think people that are like that seem to all of a sudden have a lot of luck, quote unquote, follow them, right? The investor that comes in on the last night of your fundraising, the executive from NBC that calls you after that, like it's a trajectory that I think is encouraging and inspiring to a lot of people. So thanks for sharing it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And the final thing that I'll stress here is, like, yeah, you're hearing, and the people who are listening are hearing my highlight reel, right?
Sure.
I obviously didn't walk through, and we could have an entire series on every time that I've been failed or fired or laid off or dropped the client or completely messed up the client's work. Like, all of those things exist because I'm human, right?
Right.
But it's just continuing to move forward, because whenever everything nets out, it's wildly positive.
Very cool. Well, we could do a part two and talk about all the other
I
stuff if
can't
you
wait. I
want.
can't
All
wait to
right,
broadcast that.
man. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me, Ken.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Leaders Lab podcast. If you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed making it for you, please head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening and leave us a 5-star review. And while you're there, make sure to follow the show. That'll make sure that new episodes get downloaded to your device so you can listen from wherever you are. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week in the Leaders Lab.